And as was announced, we're talking about influence tonight. Matthew chapter 5 is the place to look for that, one of the many places that you can look for that. It's part of the Beatitudes, comes right after, or part of the Sermon on the Mount, comes right after the Beatitudes, is what I meant to say. And reads that you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. One of the very first things we need to consider on this topic is that all of us have influence with someone. A person that, I guess, doesn't have any influence, doesn't know anyone, no one knows them, they never leave the house, etc., etc., you get the idea. Now, it may not be a whole lot of influence, but everybody's got some. And we need to make the best out of that. And whatever influence that we have, we would think that it needs to be in the right venue. A lot of times, the idea of influence is, most of the time, it's about our actions. Or it's, to consider something that's been said or taught. And how that is to work. What we teach, what we say, has an influence. It's like when we were singing just a few moments ago. What we're singing has an influence. It's built in. It doesn't escape. Acts chapter 20 comes to mind, and verse 35, where Paul's saying a few things to the elders at Ephesus. And he brings something up, and now what he brings up, you can't find this in the gospel accounts. That doesn't mean it's not there. But he says here, I have showed you all things, how that so laboring you ought to support the weak, and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. It's more blessed to give than to receive. You have an influence with your giving. And the blessing is there to give more than it is for that to receive. He says the Lord was the one that said that. They should remember it. And so that's something that's important. But Paul was one who was talking about influence a lot. And as a matter of fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1, and it depends on your translation, it has, be followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. Some translations have imitators rather than followers. It would mean the same thing. But you can see how it works. Christ has had this influence on the Apostle Paul, and he's hoping that he can have a good influence on others as well. But he's also hoping that they don't follow him just because he's the Apostle Paul. No, you follow me because I follow Christ. But the influence, in this sense, is handed down or delegated, if you will. And there's a lot of other ways when we see things that influence us a lot. I've told the story before, I believe, about being about 5 or 6 years old. I remember where we live, and that's what age I was when we lived there. And out behind the house, there was nothing but farmland, pretty good-sized farm. Now, if I drive up there in that part of the town, the farmland's all gone. Everywhere you can see, the farmland's gone. It's all been turned into housing developments and that kind of thing and so on. But back in my day, that's all that was back there. It was a farm. There was a farmhouse off in the distance. And it was around Christmas time. We had about 3-4 inches of new snow on the ground. My dad had permission from the man that owned the farm that we might go out there someplace and look for a suitable tree for Christmas. It saved the expense a little bit back in those days. And the man said that would be fine. And just don't damage the fence row or something like that. So we walked out there and I wanted to go. And I wanted to go every place Dad went. And so away we go, and in the snow. Now, me being this little guy, I doubt I had proper winter footwear, but Dad was blazing the trail, and I was hopping along trying to walk in his footsteps. It's what little boys do. Many years later, I related that incident to my dad about how much I remember it. And he said, I remember it too. He said, it's something to see someone struggling to follow in your footsteps. And I always tried to make sure my footsteps were in the right place, where they ought to be. And for the most part, they always were. And so that shows an influence, something like that. And I'm sure that others have incidents like that as well. Now, we are also told that an influence can be, not the best in the world. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. I'm going to read from the American Standard Version here. It says, evil companionships corrupt good morals. That's a real good passage for your children when they're growing up. I know I would relate that to my children a time or two when they got into the years to where they had friends at school and the schools got bigger. Both of them went to the second largest high school in Ohio. And they needed to hear something like this, that evil companionships corrupt good morals. And the more you're around something like this, the more that kind of thing happens. Now, on the other hand, in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 6, there's something over there that I think fits here. This is something that could really work both ways. I think, though, Paul was talking about sin at the time, of the man who had his father's wife. But he says, a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. Leaven, of course, is yeast. And you take a little bit of that and you put it into a big lump of dough. And, comparatively speaking, the amount of yeast there would be, they would save a little bit from the time before. That's what they did in this time frame here. They didn't go down to the store and buy Fleischmann's, They saved a little bit of it. And then when they made bread the next day, they would introduce the old into the brand new lump, mix that in. And the yeast in there would spread through the whole lump, just from a little bit into the whole thing. Then they'd save a little bit more for the next time, and so on it went. And so this is like what happens whenever you get a little bit of sin. There's no such thing as a little bit of sin, because a little bit of sin has the potential to be a whole lot of sin. And just a little bit of this goes a long way. It can leaven the whole lump. Kind of like the evil companionships corrupt good morals. Back in the Old Testament, in Hosea, as Hosea was telling Israel about, he was telling Israel about the reasons for the punishment that was coming their way. And like a lot of other prophets in the Old Testament, whether a major or minor prophet, it doesn't make any difference. Whether it's 60-some books or just one, there's always the sin that's happened or is happening. And then there's the pronouncement of the punishment. And one of the things that's said in Hosea in chapter 4 and verse 9 is like people, like priest. They're influencing each other. I like to think it gets into one of these things that's kind of a back and forth thing. The priests are corrupt. The people are corrupt. And because the people are corrupt, the priests, they continue to be corrupt. And here it keeps going. back and forth. The one just keeps feeding off and adding to the other. And what is it now? Corrupting the other and what? Leavening the other and so on. And you see how that works. And a lot of these things are just simply influence. I think about a king in the Old Testament, Rehoboam, right after the death of Solomon. Rehoboam was Solomon's son. And he got advice. He had some people that gave him this advice. They had an influence with Rehoboam. And they gave him some terrible advice. And the result of this, the kingdom ended up divided. And this went on, and it was just a disaster for just a number of years. So yes, there's such a thing as influence, and we hope that it's in the right place. Now, also on that little bit of leaven, that can work in a good sense as well. It's not always just about that this goes negatively. It can go in a positive sense. There can be some leaven that comes in here now that is good, and it can work, and it can contribute to a lot. But one of the things I'd like for us to consider is that God demands and expects good influence. Well, that's out of us. He doesn't expect us to just find that kind of thing. Obviously, we should. But we should strive to be a good influence and at least have some awareness of this. I think far too many times we don't do that. We don't have this awareness. We don't consider it. And it's almost like one of these things, well, you know, now people will see this and what will people think? And someone will return a comment on that and say, well, they'll just have to do the best they can. Or say, they're not worried about it. And really, they should be. Because once again, we've all got this influence and God expects us to be a good influence. He expects us to be salt and light. We'll look at that in just a moment. Proverbs chapter 22. And verse 1, a good name, you might consider that to be something like a reputation or even in the end a legacy or something along that line. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. That's Proverbs 22, verse 1. And that's right. I think that's a real good passage to use when you're talking about or considering the idea of being a good influence. Now, the Beatitudes I mentioned a moment ago, they're a lead-in to what you find in Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16, the Beatitudes in verses 3 through 12. So you see, the Beatitudes are telling us, you know, how we ought to be. How to be happy or blessed. The word that's used there, Beatitude, really means happy. But it's the idea of being happy because you're blessed. And blessed, beatitude in Latin. That's where all that comes from. But what we've got here is all these things telling us good things. Humble things. But good things and proper things. And to develop all of these things. And I'm thinking to myself, when you're looking at that section of the Beatitudes and considering those right there, and considering those in light of what follows after it. Because there's a connection now between all this. It wasn't just, well, Jesus said, here's the Beatitudes, and then that's the end of that. No, that'll never come up again. No, it goes right into it seamlessly. Because if you work on this, and you develop these things that are called Beatitudes, and this becomes your experience, this becomes part of you, then you're able to go right into the next part and be the good influence. Then you can be the salt and light that he's talking about. So yes, you know, that's how it works. It's easy to understand. The salt and light of the earth in Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, it's a lesson all in its own, both that and about the light of the world. But salt, primarily back in these days, was used for preserving foodstuffs. So they would understand that. But now when you think about this, it's that the salt has an influence on the food. It'll preserve it, make it, keep it longer. And then we all know, contrary to what my doctor harps at me all the time, it makes it taste better, the food tastes better. Yeah, it always does. And we learned that early on. So it's got a twofold purpose. I think the tasting good back in those days was kind of incidental, but the primary usage was to preserve things. So think about that. If we're salt, we're working at preserving something, not foodstuffs. Helping others to preserve their salvation as we preserve our salvation. Salt helps keep things pure as well. And when we think about that part of it, about preserving things and keeping things pure, I'm reminded of something that's found in James chapter 1. In James chapter 1 and verse 27, Christians should be involved with purity. Because it says here in James chapter 1 verse 27, pure religion and undefiled before God is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, to keep himself unspotted from the world. We're supposed to be involved with pure religion. What we do, what we practice, that kind of thing. And yes, and you do that by being the salt of the earth and help others along the way where they could be part of this as well and be salt of the earth themselves. The light of the world, you find in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14. I've always liked, I've really always been fond of Philippians 2 and 3. But and we've had some lessons out of Philippians 3, but this time it's Philippians 2. Go over here and look at what's said there. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 15. He says, that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation or generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. A little bit of light shines greatly in the darkness. If you've ever been, probably, I think they used to do this on every cave tour I ever took. They did this. They get you in there so far, they'll turn off the lights, and it's pitch black. You can't see anything. I used to work in underground mines, same thing. I had my cap light go out one time when I was walking to where the truck was supposed to pick us up. You can't see anything. I mean, put your hand in front of your face. You can't see it. You can't see this. But you just get a little bit of light. Now, back then, the guides that we had when we went to a cave, they would have a cigarette lighter. Later, they had the little gas lighters, Bic lighters. And they would just fire that thing, just one flame in there. And I mean to tell you, it was just like a lighthouse had come on in that total darkness. Made that much of a difference. It's amazing. And that was true in the mine. I couldn't do anything. I just stood there till I saw headlights. Then I started running about as fast as I dared to go to catch up. But a little bit of light. But so Christians are to shine as lights. Like that. In the midst of a what? A crooked and perverse nation. We're going to shine as lights in the world. And so, you know, we let the light shine. Not that we shine our light, but we let the light shine. Others will see this, and it will have an influence on them. You know, light is something, and when this happens in the dark, light dispels darkness. That's what it does. If you walked into this building like sometime in the evening, say that you're down to clean the building, and you walk in here and the building's a little dark and one thing and another, and the further you get up here, the darker it gets. But when you flip the lights on back there, what a difference it makes. Light dispels darkness. That's what it does. And so our light should be dispelling this darkness that's out here in this crooked and perverse generation. And also it says that your good works may be seen, and that the men will glorify God because of your good works. So this is telling me that our good works are to be attractive. That's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be attractive. That they're to attract others. And that others will see the light, they'll be attracted to those things. They'll realize, you know, that these things are being done because of God, and they'll glorify God on this account. So we need to really consider our influence. It's something that you can see from this is very important. Now, how to have good influence? That's the next part here. The first thing, and I'd say a primary thing, if you want to have good influence, what you need to do is this old, I don't want to say cliche, maxim maybe, whatever. But you need to practice what you preach. That's what you need to do. You need not just talk about it. You need to practice it. I've got James chapter 2, verse 18. You know the passage, don't you? It's talking about faith and works. And what does it say there? It says, a man may say, you have faith and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Will you practice what you preach? I worked with a man, and he worked with a fellow that I was friends with. And this one man, was his name was Charlie, and he was a member of one of the little congregations where I used to go and preach once a month. Had several of them I did that. And the thing I always noticed about this, Charlie would always come and he would talk to me a lot about the church and this, that, and the other. But every time I was there at Mount Union, I never did see Charlie there. Not one time, ever. I thought, well, you know, it's possible. I'm just there once a month. He worked shift work 7 days a week. It was possible that when I was there, he was just, you know, on the wrong kind of shift. Sure, kind of thing happened. But then I come to find out that really wasn't what was happening there, because Charlie just didn't hardly go at all. And they were having a gospel meeting at Mount Union. And I went down to talk to this friend of mine about going to the gospel meeting. And there was another fellow that went to church at Mount Union. He went a little bit, more often than Charlie did. His name was Kermit. And Kermit came in and got on the conversation. He said, oh yeah, he said, I've been asking Larry to go too. I thought, well, okay, this is working out pretty good. And so I went down later on, and I'd gone to the meeting a couple of times. I went down there later on, and I said something about going to the meeting again that night. I thought maybe if I told Larry I was going that night, he might come, might feel a little bit more at ease. And Larry said, and Kermit said the same thing about inviting him. And Larry said, I was there last night. I sat there in the parking lot. I waited on you, Kermit. And you never showed up. And then Larry had to go do something. Kermit's sitting there at the table. You can imagine his embarrassment. And me sitting there. I didn't see a whole lot of reason to say much. I didn't want to, you know, pile on to this or anything like that. I just sat there. Kind of embarrassing, too. And Kermit finally spoke up and he says, I really blew it. Well, since he owned up to it, I said, Kermit, it seems hard that you would invite somebody to something that you wouldn't go to yourself. Yeah. He said, I need to pick things up. I don't know if he ever did or not. I don't know. He didn't as long as I was there. But you see, you should practice what you preach. You should practice what you preach. In so many things. If you say, if this is right, do it. If you say, if this is wrong, don't do it. Practice what you preach. That'll go a long way in helping the influence that we might have. Another thing, go to Revelation chapter 14. In Revelation chapter 14, and in verse 12. Revelation chapter 14, verse 12, here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Well, who are all those? Well, it is all those that have gone through a lot and they've remained faithful. And what you see here, and I want us to take away from that, is that you don't compromise the truth. you keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. If you want your influence to be what it should be, do that. Don't compromise the truth. Don't apologize for it or anything like that. You don't need to be teaching someone, trying to talk to them just a little bit, and then apologizing every minute or something. Don't compromise the truth at all. Paul said he was there at Ephesus for all that time when he talks to the elders, and he said, I went from house to house. You know all these things. I didn't hold anything back. The whole counsel of God. And also, in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 10, Philippians 1 this time, verse 10. That you may approve things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ. Avoid being an offense. Now, this doesn't mean offense or offending like it does today. It seems like today, the time we live in, offending is something that's just, it's just rampant. I think the word's abused and misused to no end. You would be hard pressed to find somebody who wasn't offended about something. And you would be hard pressed to find too many people who weren't offended in multiple ways over multiple things. It just seems like that's kind of the natural byline anymore, or something like that. Well, I don't like this, or I don't like that. I'm offended by. And we got all these people that are trying to avoid offending people. The Lord offended the Pharisees. His disciples came to him and he said, don't you know that the Pharisees are offended by this? Oh, and Jesus, oh, I'm sorry, I'll try and do something like that. Well, he didn't do that. I think he made note of it. And he just continued down the path that he was going. The course he'd chosen to do, he continued on that. That's not what this means by offense here. By offense, this means don't become a stumbling block. That's what it means. The rock of offense it talks about in Romans. Don't be that. Don't be an occasion where you put something in front of somebody and causes them to stumble. It's like the other two things up there, only, you know, making a little stronger case here. So don't be a stumbling block. And I think to myself, if there's an example of someone in the Scriptures, I actually thought about this a lot. And it finally dawned on me one day, I thought, I'll know who I can use as an example of someone who had some influence and used it well. You know who I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of Cornelius. Yeah, Cornelius. Go to Acts chapter 10. Now there are three passages I want us to see here. Now Cornelius is told in verse 5, chapter 10 of Acts, verse 5. Send men to Joppa and call for one Simon, whose surname is Peter. Now that's what you're supposed to do. Now it's going to take a little while for those men to go from where they're at there in Caesarea over to Joppa. Then it's going to take a little bit of time to go from Joppa back to Caesarea. So you've got a little bit of time that's involved. What's going on there with Cornelius during this time? Well, take a look at verse 24. Now, on the morrow, that would be the ones who were coming from Joppa with Peter. On the morrow, when they entered Caesarea, Cornelius waited for them. Now watch this now. And this kind of gets looked over. He had called together his kinsmen and near friends. Would those be people he's got some influence with? And he's told them what's about to take place, what's going on, what's been set in order. And telling them and impressing on them, you really need to be here. I think that's what you see. And it's worked. You know, he's got them there. I don't know how many there were. But he called together as many as were willing to come. And then what else do we see? Well, when you get over to verse 33, as Cornelius is explaining how things have developed, he said, "Immediately, therefore, I sent to thee, and thou hast well done that thou art come." Now watch this. "Now, therefore, are we all here present before God to hear all things that are commanded thee of God?" I've used my influence to get these folks over here because I know why you're coming. And I want to hear it. And I want all of them to hear it. Look at what his influence has done. And in the end, we see where there were those of, there was Cornelius and those of his household. I don't know if it was all of them or not. Don't know how many there were. But in the end, we find out that they end up believing in what what he said about Jesus. And we find them being obedient. We find them being baptized. We see everything works out here in this good and great way. And for more than just Cornelius. Because he had some influence. And he was able to use that influence in a good and proper way. Now take your song books and turn to the song that's been selected. Appreciate your attention and your patience with me here. And hopefully that we can learn some things and use these things ourselves. And use our influence properly and wisely. And one of the ways that we can be an influence is by being obedient to the gospel all the time. Sometimes it's the first time. You know, I've often had the pleasure, you know, to baptize folks. And if I have a little bit of time, it's nice. We had a family that used to sit over here when I was at Tuckerman. Had some little boys over there. And if there was a baptism that was going to take place, I had a clear shot at these boys. I could see them. And I want to tell you what. They had a clear shot at me too. And they were right up there against the pew. They weren't sitting there. They were standing up. They had their hands on the back of the pew. And they were pulling themselves forward to get as close a look as they could from where they were at. Was that an influence? Yeah. Somebody being baptized, that's a great thing. And that has some influence on others. I know there was one time we were having a gospel meeting, had a young man. He came in, he had a paper bag with him, with those little handles on it, you know. And he came in there and I asked him, I said, "What's in your poke there?" And he said, "I've got a change of clothes in here." I said, "I know what that's for." And so he was baptized at the invitation that night. And so at the conclusion, we had prayer and everything and dismissed. And I was tying up my shoes, actually. I slipped them on. I was tying them up. And I heard someone outside the door. They propped the door open. Someone, they were out there talking. And I heard some commotion, some loud voices. And his aunt came in the door and said, "I think she's going to do it." And here comes the aunt's daughter, Xander's cousin. Xander's a young man, just been baptized. Here she comes in the door and come over there. And she said, "I want to be baptized too. I watched Xander and I know what the truth is. I've heard it all my life. I need to do this." Is that influence? Yeah. There are millions of other things like this that show influence. And a lot of times just by being obedient to the gospel for the first time. But also by those who are obedient to the gospel in the long run. to think of somebody that maybe even struggles to make an effort to come out to services. We had a woman at Orleans. She had cancer. She'd had all the treatments that you could think of, and it was inoperable. She's kind of like Jane Curry. And her name was Joanne. Spelled Joan, but they pronounced it Joanne, I believe. And she would come with her mother-in-law. They'd pull up in the parking lot, and they would walk over to the building. We had this bench in the coat room there off the building. And she'd sit down there. Now, I knew why she was sitting down there. By the time she walked from the car to the building, she wore out. She just lacked the strength. She'd sit there a little bit, and then she'd get up and she'd go back up there to the pew. Day after day, that's what she did. Both times on Sunday. Seldom ever missed. Not until she got really bad. And then she wasn't bad very long before she passed away. But that's what she did all the time. When she got ready to leave, she walked back to that bench and sit there a little while, get up, go out to the car. That's somebody that wanted to do that. They wanted to. She wasn't sitting there planning on this being some kind of an influence. But I thought to myself, boy, it sure is. It really is. And that makes me think to myself sometimes, I think about that, and I think about, you know, those times when I've got a sore toe or whatever it is, you know. I think about her and I think, she could do that. I could go with my sore toe or whatever. You can have an influence just by being faithful. Don't discount it. It's something that has great potential. Because we can influence a whole lot of people. Anyway, the opportunity is yours. If you'd like to become a Christian tonight, or if we can help you to make things right, get you back on the right track, whatever the case might be, if we can offer help to you and assistance, this is the right time, this is the right place. Why don't you come all together, we stand and sing.